Toon Lake.
The place where one of our greatest adventures all started.
I can't believe Henry Muntz and the Third Key are both gone.
I can't believe he jumped over the edge of Schweitzer Falls like that just to save the final key from Casablanca's toughs after they found us inside the tropical hideaway.
And I can't believe he's gone.
I know, Freddy, but Annie already said that.
No, Al. I mean, I don't actually believe he's gone.
Okay, Freddy, what do you mean?
Yeah, we all just saw him jump.
We did indeed, but did we ever see his body come back up after the jump?
Oh, Freddy, that's morbid.
It's not morbid, because he's not gone. Look, guys, the waterways under Schweitzer Falls have to be riddled with cave systems and air pockets.
Yeah?
Yeah, and there's no way a smart guy like Henry would have jumped without some sort of a plan.
So you think his plan was to escape through one of the hidden waterway tunnels under Schweitzer Falls?
Well, that's my hope.
Well, what do we do in the meantime while we wait for months to surface again?
Well, I think we only have one choice.
What's that, Al?
Well, we continue to explore the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind our favorite Disney attractions.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It'll help keep my mind off worrying about poor Henry.
That's true enough.
Well, what better way to continue this journey than right here in front of Gadget's Go Coaster?
Gadget's Go Coaster! One of the only two actual rides in this area, if you even want to call it a ride. It's so tiny and short.
It really is a short ride at only 45 seconds long.
Yeah, Annie, you're right about this coaster. It lives up to its design name. It's actually called a standard Vekoma brand roller skater junior roller coaster.
What does that even mean?
It's a mouthful. But I've actually heard of Vekoma. They're essentially a roller coaster kit maker.
Wait, that's a thing?
It sure is. So Vekoma specializes in these types of coasters. They've built their kits in three different lengths. The first one is 85 meters, the second one is 207 meters, and the final one is 335 meters.
That's right. Gadget's Go Coaster is the medium one, the 207 meter model.
Wait. It may be a kit, but Disney has created its own unique ride path for the ride to differentiate from other roller skater coasters, right?
Well, I wish. You know, there's numerous Vekoma kits out there, and all of the 207 meter models follow the exact same path as Gadget's Go Coaster here.
So if I were to go to, say, Tokushima Family Land, my favorite theme park outside of Disneyland, and ride their junior coaster, it would be the same ride as Gadget's Go Coaster?
Turn for turn and dippity dip for dip.
Gosh, that seems so... so...
un-Disney?
Yeah.
Well, it's good to keep in mind that Disney has used outside organizations to build attractions like this. It's nothing new. For instance, any listener of the show or somebody who loves Disney park history will have some familiarity with the name Arrow Development.
Of course. It's basically a household name for a Disney park nerd.
Well, Arrow Development has a similar relationship with Disney. They were instrumental in building some of our most beloved attractions here in the park.
Well, I guess you're right.
But, Annie, I have to say, I see where you're coming from. I mean, we've come to expect a bespoke park experience when visiting a Disney park, so knowing that there are templated kits like this coaster that exist at other parks can be a little bit jarring.
Yeah, it really is. But from my recollection, this is the first time in the history of the show that we've covered a kit design like this, right?
From what we can tell, it is indeed.
It seems like it's really out of the ordinary for Disney to do something like this then.
You know, it absolutely is, but I think this attraction is a living piece of insight into a very interesting time in Disney history, and that is the reign of Michael Eisner. You know, one of the big things that we see with Michael Eisner is his move from movies into parks when he became the president and CEO of the Walt Disney Company. He believed in this high concept, low budget thinking. Now, in movies, this worked out really, really good. Essentially, what he said is he wanted some large blockbuster type movie, but done on a low, no, or independent film budget. And for many, many years, this is essentially what Disney's empire was built on at that time, was these high concept, low budget films. But Eisner tends to bring that into the parks as well when it comes to his designs, when it comes to his implementation. And you can see this especially in places like Toontown's Gadget Go Coaster. Can you guys think of any other examples of this? I've got a couple of ones in mind down at Walt Disney World, but I'm curious if you guys have ever seen any examples of this from Eisner's touch.
Well, actually, when I was working at the park, they put in the Disney Afternoon was a big deal at the time. And so the Disney Afternoon cartoons, they were trying to figure out ways to bring them into the parks. And they actually took over the motorboat cruise and made it a Gummy Bears cruise. And that we've talked about that on the show, I think.
Yes.
And
yes.
The Gummy Bears cruise was definitely, well, I'm not even sure if it was high concept, but at least it was a concept, and it definitely was low budget. They put a bunch of colored flats around the motorboat cruise, and you could drive in and around Gummy Glen with your favorite friends from TV's The Gummy Bears.
I think that's a perfect example. One of the big ones that I see is, Freddie, I know you've been to Walt Disney World. Annie, have you been to Disney World?
I have not. It's so sad.
Okay. Well, in Animal Kingdom, there is a corner of the park over by the dinosaur ride where it just, I don't know how to explain this area that houses the primeval whirl and everything around there. But Freddie, do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I sure do. I want to hear your side first, and I think I'm going to surprise you.
Well, my opinion is, well, I'll say Animal Kingdom, I believe, is a half-day park. I think that there are a lot of things over there that it just doesn't feel fully cooked. And that's one of the areas that it almost seems like it's an Indiana Jones ride path that's just dark because they ran out of funding at that time. And they were like, okay, let's put in a primeval whirl. Let's put in a triceratops that whirls you around for little kids, and we'll call it an archaeological dig. The end. So surprise me, Freddie.
Well, so you're right. I mean, to your point, the rides in Dino Land, specifically the area of Dino Land that is, oh, I wish the names of the curators of that part of the park was on the tip of my tongue. But that area, that particular area of the park is filled with Kit rides. There's a Kit coaster, but it's got a little spinny thing on it. There's the spin around flying triceratops twirl, something like that.
Yeah.
Those really are just Kit rides that you can get at from a dealer, and then they theme them to be all their own. Here's the thing. This is such a sidebar from Toontown, but here's the thing about that land is they have overlaid story in such a way. They've done it so well that people think that part of the park is cheesy. And the truth is, that was what was intended. We could go into that another time, but it is a fascinating story. I encourage anybody who goes to Walt Disney World to not overlook the details that make up the three areas of Dino Land itself, that just being one small area of it where all the cheesy rides are.
Well, and I guess that's the thing that, to me, if we're still on that subject, it feels it's juxtaposed against a very serious and adventurous background.
Right.
And then you get that land. And so I think that everybody who goes through there who feels that way, I want to hear more of your thoughts later on, Freddie.
I think they're justified. I think when you look at it, if you look at it as a whole, that part of the park is kind of silly. But, when you look into it, I encourage everybody to get online, figure out what the three areas of Dino Land are, and I think you'll actually become a fan.
I'll reserve judgment simply because Jurassic Park is my favorite film of all time, and I was always hoping that area would be somewhat Jurassic Park-y. But again, we digress. But I do think that that's actually a great point, though, because you see I'm trying to think. 98 is when Animal Kingdom opened up, right?
I think 99 might could be wrong.
Okay. And then, so California Adventure was just right after that. Was it 2000?
2001.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially you're starting to see Eisner's end of his park builds going on here with things like Animal Kingdom. And I really do think that one of the things that we see is Eisner truly believed, and if you listen to our Toontown episode, we go into this in depth, Eisner fully believed that he was the reincarnate Walt Disney. Yeah. And I think over time, when he first started out, there's no denying that that dude had charisma, he had excitement, he had vision, and he had drive. But over the years, I think that he started to get worn down. I think he started to get tired, as anybody in that job would. And as a result, I think that we start seeing these types of moves come up. But I also have a theory that I want to talk about a little later on with this, because I think that I have a thought that we haven't necessarily, that not a lot of people explore about Gadget's Go Coaster. But
Let me button that up just one more dot. You know, roller coaster, theme park, all designers of all these places that we love to go to are always met with the problem of three things. There's scope, scale, and budget. And you can't have speed, budget, and scale. And so if you want a quality area in your park, you've got to give plenty of time and plenty of money towards it. And if the budget of a theme park, whether it's Toontown or whatever, if that is scaled back and you have a deadline to meet, well, then you've got to be really, really creative to bring out the quality. And so something like Animal Kingdom, a lot of its budget went to certain things and a lot of its budget didn't. And the Imagineers had a challenge, and I think they met it. I think they met it there. I think they met it here in Toontown. But what it is you're like, hey, we got to make Goofy's house. What about the special effects? Can we have special effects in Goofy's house? No, you have this amount of money.
Yeah.
And the Imagineers turn around and go, well, let's make something as great as we possibly can with as little money as
possible.
With that. And that's how you end up with something like that. And that's why I like digging into the details, is because
without a doubt,
that's when you find that's where the money went.
And that's what you always see along this entire journey. I mean, we go back to the perfect metaphorical example for this of Discovery Bay, that you have Tony Baxter coming up with this grandiose idea that is absolutely amazing. Which even before then, you have Mark Davis coming up with stuff for the Magic Kingdom that is mind-boggling with things like Thunder Mesa. And it all comes back to budgetary issues. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, please do yourselves a favor, listeners, and go back to our Big Thunder Mountain three-part series, because Harrison and I cover the entirety of Big Thunder Mesa and Discovery Bay and what that was going to look like in Disney, both Disneyland and Disney World. But because, just like with what Freddie's talking about here, budgetary constraints and things happened, and they didn't come to fruition as a result. But I completely agree with you, Freddie. And the thing that I want to talk about here in a little bit, I think, also ties into that. But regardless of the origins of the coaster itself, Imagineers really were able to make this coaster as uniquely their own as they possibly could with, as you said, Freddie, the budget that they were given.
That's right. The space that they had in that area, not very big. So they placed it over the shores of Toon Lake, which is probably smaller than most of the swimming pools you've ever seen, making then the coaster seem at least a little more daring to ride. They also added some pieces to the coaster, like the shape of the coaster buckets, the seats, to make it fit within the theme quite perfectly.
Little acorns.
Yeah, it's very cute. And the Rescue Rangers theme. One of the more memorable shows to come out of the Disney Afternoon era, don't you think?
I loved Rescue Rangers when it came out.
I think if you were to rank them, you'd go DuckTales, then Rescue Rangers, then all the rest.
DuckTales was, yeah, my favorite.
Because there are ones that stand out. And I will say that of the Disney Afternoon, now that everybody has Disney Plus, it's great to be able to go back and watch those. But one of the best ones that actually holds up, in my opinion, is also Tailspin. Tailspin is an unsung hero of the Disney Afternoon, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for us Adventurelanders, Tailspin is supposed to be right up our alley.
Oh yes. Ha, ha, ha. Tailspin! Sorry, that's what I grew up with when I was a kid.
I remember that name, but I can't remember the show.
Baloo and King Louie were in it.
Okay.
Baloo
yeah.
flew a plane.
King Louie yes. owned like a tiki bar type thing.
How yeah. Do you know anything about how long these shows were on air? And was this also the time when Disney Channel was something you had to subscribe to that would just come on for like a month of free? Or was this wasn't on Disney Channel?
No. So this was on just regular television.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because I remember watching these, but I was young and I can't. I don't have Disney Plus still. You guys, I'm terrible. So
that's okay. Let her be pure. She's got stuff to do.
Freddie let you off the hook, Andrea, but not this guy. Not this guy. But no, they weren't on Disney Channel. I do think that they were a big push to try to get people to sign up for the Disney Channel simply because it was always pushing towards that monetization way. But we'll actually go into – I want to talk a little bit later on about – the time, the length that these shows were on, because mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing that, in my opinion, that they would theme something like this to a show that's been largely forgotten by our younger audiences. And I would say anybody under the age of probably 25 doesn't even know. But again, this has Eisner's business synergy strategy written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember why our ride is called Splash Mountain.
I actually don't know. Why is it?
Well, believe it or not, Andrea, we actually cover this heavily in the Splash Mountain episode. But in a nutshell, Michael Eisner wanted the attraction to be used as a promotional tool for the Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah film Splash.
Just the thought of an audio animatronic Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah makes me both elated and giddy and quite terrified. I've been on the Great Movie Ride, and those don't exactly look like the stars.
It looks like a wax museum where they've turned up the heat. That's what all of those lower animatronics look like. I totally agree, Freddie. But I'm also really glad that the Imagineers stood their ground with this. But you see, that compromise came through by still naming the attraction Splash Mountain. And now you know, Annie.
Gosh, you're right. This synergy is seen throughout the park.
And Gadget's Go Coaster was no exception. Like you said, Annie, the attraction was based on the TV show Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, which featured Chip and Dale as the leaders of a mystery-solving, crime-fighting, caper-foiling group of rodents.
With Gadget Hackwrench playing the role of the genius inventor mouse, hence the invention of this little coaster.
And if I recall, she was voiced by voice actress extraordinaire Tress McNeil.
Wait, why does that name sound familiar?
Because she's one of the voices of your childhood, Al. She started out as a member of the famous Groundlings, the improv troupe school, but then moved on to voice characters such as Babs Bunny in Tiny Toon Adventures, Dot Warner from Animaniacs. She was the female vocalist in Weird Al's song, Ricky, and she was the voice of Katrina Shanks on
Adventures and Odyssey. I knew her name sounded familiar as well as her voice. But wait, why was it? Hold on. She was a regular on The Simpsons, wasn't she?
Yeah, she sure was. But we all know her mostly from her current role as the voice of Donald's best gal and Minnie's happy helper partner, Daisy Duck.
McNeil really is a voice acting master, and her character of Gadget in the show that ran from 89 to 90 really was one of the big reasons for the show's success.
Wait, are you saying this attraction is based on a show that only lasted a little over a year?
That's what I understand, but it was huge in syndication. It aired for years in reruns after the age of new episodes were being released.
But Annie, you bring up a great point. The shortness of the show, coupled with the fact that it was already in reruns during the opening of Toontown, in my opinion, justifies the introduction of a kit coaster into the park.
Okay, I don't quite follow.
Yeah, I'm with Annie on this one, pal.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is the fact that Eisner was no dummy. The guy had to know this kind of IP wouldn't last forever. It had a short shelf life. So why would he spend a huge amount of money on an attraction to promote a show that was already pretty much over? I personally believe that Gadget's Go Coaster was a placeholder, an attraction that could be replaced easily down the line when Toontown proved to be a smash hit.
But it never proved to be a smash hit.
Hence the reason why Gadget's Go Coaster lives on to this day. Again, this is all my opinion, but to be fair, Imagineers did the best with what they were given with this little tiny coaster.
They sure did. Look, they made sure to blow up all the details to make it seem like we as the rider had been shrunk down to mouse size. There's popsicle sticks and thread spools that tower over us as the riders, making us feel like we've gone through Wayne Szalinski's shrinking machine.
Yeah, this little pint-sized kit coaster opened in January 24th of 1993, and it's remained a part of Toontown Skyline ever since. Now, one of the things that I'm curious about, friends, is have you ridden Gadget's Go Coaster?
I have, and I have a cool story to tell about it.
Freddie, how about you? No, I'm kidding. Annie.
You don't want to hear.
No, yeah, I really want to hear it.
I can tell you real quickly. So I remember the first time I rode it, Toontown had opened up. It had been open for maybe less than a year. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure, but I was around 8 years old.
Oh, the perfect age.
And it really was the perfect age. So Toontown was new, and the day that we were there filming, it so happened that I'm a twin. I have a twin sister. There was another set of twins that were there.
Blows my mind.
And the other set of twins that were there were actually filming a show. Do you know what twins I'm talking about?
Mary-Kate and Ashley?
Yes, the Olsen twins.
Yes.
Yes, so they were filming their little detective show, and they were doing a promo at Disneyland, and so we got in line to ride the Gadget Go Coaster, and they were ahead of us. We didn't realize it until we were like further in the line, because the line for that ride was pretty long.
Yeah.
And they were seated in the back when we got on to do like a special filmed version, and we got to ride on the same roller coaster as Mary-Kate and Ashley during their promo for Disneyland.
That's crazy.
And as twins, yeah, you guys probably had to love that.
we loved it. We were fans of their show
Twin
and
heroes.
Fans of them. And but I have to say we were the cooler twins.
That's what I heard. Now you're not an identical twin, are you, Annie?
No, I'm a fraternal twin.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool. Just on that note, my mom and my uncle, they're twins as well. And people will always ask them, are you identical? It's the stupidest question.
It's like, no.
But sometimes there's conversations that parts of my life that come out that kind of knock people's socks off. So I used to work for Mary-Kate and Ashley, but that is another story.
Wait.
Oh, whoa.
No, Freddie, that's not another story for another
time.
That's another story for right now.
No. It's just too small. I worked for their lawyer in the mailroom of a law firm and would always bring their mail to him.
Oh, my word. You were the carrier for Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. Freddie. This is what I love. I love getting to know you guys. Everybody just learned that Annie's a twin.
Yep.
And everybody just learned that Freddie worked for twins. And believe it or not, I was actually a stunt double in the film Twins for Danny DeVito.
I was going to say for Tom Cruise. You remind me of Tom Cruise, Al.
Oh, well, I'll say thank you, maybe.
In a cool way, in a good way. Yeah.
Okay. I like to think that I've got his wry wit and his looks in Tom Gunn.
You have his mole.
In Top Gun.
Tom Gunn.
I have his mole.
Does he have a mole? Doesn't he have a mole?
I think you're thinking of Cindy Crawford
or Abraham Lincoln
or Enrique Iglesias. No, he doesn't have a mole anymore.
You know what I love? Real quick, I just have to throw it out there that 90%. Of our reviews that we get on Apple Podcasts, say somewhere in there, please note before you start this show that these guys go on tangents all the time. And so, you know what? At least we're just living up to that.
No, Annie, we're not. We're speaking about moles, which are the same as rodents. They're in the rodent family. And hence Chip and Dale.
And hence Annie, Gadget the Mouse.
Yes.
You guys have just wrapped this up so perfectly. Man.
Yes.
Well, do you guys like Gadget's Go Coaster? What's your opinion on the ride itself?
Well, when I was 8, which is, it's nice that I had that experience when I was young to ride it. I thought it was so exciting because I hadn't ridden anything else at Disneyland yet. It was, I think maybe I was starting to ride Splash Mountain and things like that, but...
It was like your first thrill ride, though.
Yeah, because we didn't go to Disneyland a ton when I was really little. We started going more when I was 12 and up. That was probably the first time I started riding more exciting rides. And it seemed short, but it was, you know, it got you going.
I agree, and that's what I think that this ride is for. I think that this is designed for those little thrill seekers. This is their first step into the world of roller coasters. Freddie, I mean, coming from somebody that you were a little bit older when this opened, what were your thoughts?
I brought my kids to it.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that as a dad?
I'm a Disneyland completist. I have to go on the rides.
Yeah.
And that bottom turn is actually pretty high G-force, so it's it can be a lot of fun. But it is short, and you are going to wait in a long line with a lot of little kids, and it can get warm in that corner because of the way those cement walls are right next to you. And so it can get a little bit warm and annoying to get on. Plus, I'm a 6'3" and I have to crisscross my legs. There's only room for one of me in one of the cars, which is I'm glad that it's Gadget's Go Coaster that I'm almost outsized for. I have a friend whose son got really tall, like basketball tall, and one day he posted, "I can't go on Space Mountain anymore." His favorite ride. Imagine that, your entire life you're going on Space Mountain, then one day they go, "Sir, I'm sorry, you can't go on this anymore." And he was, you know, he's like 20 when that happened. So goodbye, Space Mountain.
That's
why I'm glad to be short. Yeah. I may look like Tom Cruise, but I also have his height at 5'6". I love being this height because and that's what we talked about earlier, just Freddie and I and Annie, is that this ride for even a guy who's short like me is kind of a tall order. And so, Freddie, with somebody of your stature, I'm surprised that your sheer height doesn't just pull the car over on the tracks just from that height on there. It is it's a little roller coaster. Well, I mean, it's a little coaster for a little tykes.
Monster. I'm just a caveman. I don't understand your big words.
Let me simplify. Tap, tap on rock. Thoughts? I mean, do you guys feel like this ride hits the mark for little kids? Do you think they love it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah?
Freddie, did your kids love it?
My kids did, but there's so much more in the park that's entertaining. And to go all the way back into that far, far corner is often sort of the last thing that me and my kids would do. And we ended up spending our time elsewhere in the park.
Yeah. I think that if I were to say that I ever had something not negative to say, but not, I don't ever want to say anything bad about any Disney attractions, but I'll say this, that I don't know if it hits Walt's mark of a ride that both parents and kids can thoroughly enjoy together. I think that, at least from my perspective, because I just rode it for the first time last year, and I enjoyed it, but it wasn't one of those where I wouldn't really be eager to rewrite it for quite a while. I mean, do you guys feel like that's kind of the same on your side as well?
I think what you just said, I completely agree with. It does not hold up to the standard of being fun for parents and children at the same time. And but it is one of the only roller coasters for little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that's exciting about that. I could see it maybe being replaced with something that's a different theme. But I was always just enamored by the idea that I was a little kid and I could go on a roller coaster. And it was...
You conquered the coaster.
Yeah.
Coaster conquerors. Well, one of the things that it either bugs me or I think it's brilliant. Is the I can't tell if sometimes it's seamless and sometimes it's not. So it is right next to the location of Toon Lake and Gadget's Ghost Coaster is right next to Donald Duck's ship and Mickey Mouse's house and Chippendale's tree. And if we are duck-sized, well, then this roller coaster with giant thimbles, then we're the smallest ducks you've ever seen. If we're
scale
mouse
issue.
Right, if we're mouse-sized, then Gadget's like giant thimbles and acorns makes me wonder what size is a real mouse. And then right next door is Mickey Mouse, and he's got a full-size house, a full-size refrigerator, and a barn in his backyard. And so you have this sort of scale problem. Now, that being said, as you walk from Donald's Lake, where a ship is moored, you go over to the this area of the lake, which is supposed to be smaller. It's gadget-sized. Well, you do kind of move in there and shrink yourself because it feels like you're in the grasses all of a sudden of the lake that Donald Duck's boat is in. And then being there right next door to Mickey Mouse's house, if you stand at Mickey Mouse's house, that is his shores of Toon Lake. So there's something that I think they intended to do was almost like a lens or a movie director view, that if you look at it on its own, you are shrunk down to the size of a thimble. But if you're pulled out and zoomed out, it's just the shores of a little lake. So I just find it's hard to catch all the details, but I think they tried, and in some ways they really succeeded.
I think you're spot on there. I think you're absolutely spot on. I think that, again, like you said, we're talking space issue. But I also see a lot of the work that they did in Toontown being more so perfected in Toy Story Land, or so it seems. I mean, I haven't been there personally, but I feel like a lot of, like you're talking about, these scale issues are starting to work themselves out, and I feel like Toontown was almost a proving ground for some of that work. Now, do you guys see Gadget's Go Coaster sticking around? Does it have the staying power of, say, Snow White's Scary Adventures?
I think it will be replaced at some point. Or rethemed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think at the very least, a retheming is probably pretty darn close, would be my thoughts. Freddie, what do you think?
Well, I think everything has a time limit on it, but there's some interesting limitations there, right? So they are going to put in the Mickey's Runaway Railway in Toontown.
Yes.
We hope that those plans don't change.
And as some listeners may be experiencing this at a different time, they may already have it installed in there.
Oh, that is true. We'll have to write the episode and slip it in there when that happens. So
yes.
Mickey Mouse's Runaway Railway is going to breathe new life, or will have already breathed new life into Toontown. But that little corner where Gadget's Go Coaster is and Chippendale's Treehouse is really a cul-de-sac that's a little bit of trouble. Now, here's the thing. On the other side of the wall, the sort of muddy marsh that's on the other side of Gadget's Go Coaster, that's actually a cement wall that is the tunnel for the train. So you can't go anywhere that direction. It's not like if they tore it out, they could put in something bigger. They'd have to put in something smaller. Now, the backside of that, if you went over to the backside of Mickey's house, you could knock down that wall and go straight into Galaxy's Edge. I don't see a Toontown to Galaxy's Edge transition.
It seems seamless.
Seems seamless. Not as well as Frontierland. So it's almost like it's protected by its own real estate. Now, of course, if they decided to make a Chippendale or a Donald Duck or some other way, well, it'd be a good idea. But really, its cul-de-sac is its strength.
I think I have just, again, an armchair Imagineering. I would love to see that devoted to Daisy Duck. I would love to see Daisy have a roller coaster back there. And it makes sense being nestled up right next to her best guy, Donald. And I think that would be fun. And again, we're looking at timeless there, because Daisy has stood the test of decades and decades of time. And so I think that a retheming like that could go on for a very long time, and you still have kids who are experiencing their first coaster without being like, wait, who's Gadget? And their parents probably don't even know who Gadget is at that point.
Yeah, like we've already been talking, you know, it was our time, but I've already forgotten a lot about the show because it was only on for a year.
Well, and that's the crazy thing is, I mean, new episodes were created over about an 18-month period, but then they just kept reusing those and rerunning those shows for mm-hmm. many different years, whether it was through the Disney Afternoon or just on local television. And so kids really did still grow up with Rescue Rangers, with Tailspin, with Darkwing Duck, so on and so forth. But yeah, the show only lasted, and that was one of the things that surprised me the most about researching this, is that the show was only in production for 18 months, but it churned out a ton of episodes.
Yeah. You know, after exploring this attraction in more detail, it makes me see it in a whole new light.
Yeah, I agree, Annie. But I think Gadget's Go Coaster is kind of historically important. It serves as a relic, almost a metaphor for what the company stood for back then during the reign of Michael Eisner.
I couldn't agree with you more, Freddie. I mean, Gadget's Go Coaster may seem dated to some, but we as Disneyland fans need to see it as having some sort of value to remind us of a very specific era in the park's storied history. And with the changes that are happening in this part of the park, only time will truly tell if Gadget's Go Coaster will stick around or if it will go one of the ways we just talked about.
Well, speaking of Gadget, she can also be seen, if you're looking, on a weather vane on that building right over there.
Oh, the one by Chippendale's Treehouse?
That's the one. And speaking of Chippendale's Treehouse, we need to talk about that one next.
Oh, hold your horses, Freddie. Let's save that conversation for the next episode.
Fair enough, Al. Folks, if you like this miniature episode about a miniature coaster, please consider throwing a miniature 5-star review our way on Apple Podcasts.
You can also follow show updates and see the fun stuff that we're doing by following us on Instagram, searching for Backside of Water Podcast or for our own Instagrams respectively.
Yeah, you can also join our fun little Facebook community by searching the Backside of Water Podcast there as well. And like Annie said, don't forget to follow Freddie and Annie on the old socials as well. You can find Freddie on Instagram and Twitter as @SkipperFreddie and the wonderful Andrea Ruget on Instagram as @AnnieRuget. Do you do Twitter stuff, Annie?
Yeah, I do Twitter.
Okay, what's your tweet handle?
It's the same, thank goodness. AnnieRuget, Annie Ruget.
Awesome. Finally, please be sure to check out our sister podcast, Did You Know Disney?, a show where we dig a little deeper, explore a little further, and discover even more of the magic within the wonderful world of Disney. You can find that show wherever you found this one.
Now, as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step.
And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head,
please watch your language. Goodbye, folks.